p.m. on ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's the GM, Floyd Reese. I'm Jared Stillman. We are live today at Bridgestone Arena, Preds and Jets, and this is a playoff preview. As I said earlier today, I guarantee these two teams will be playing at the end of the year in the second round of the playoffs. To me, it is a foregone conclusion. We will see these two teams. We will see them. It just makes sense. So yesterday we had Adam Vingan on from The Athletic, and somebody called in and asked about what are they going to do with the trade deadline. But really, I just felt like that caller wanted to call in to express his anger at Kevin Fiala more than anything else. But anywho, the question is going to come up for the next month. Are the Preds going to make a trade? Jared, are the Preds going to make a trade? They need a trade. They need a player. They need a guy. They need a Wayne Simmons. They need Wayne Simmons. Go get Wayne Simmons. They've got to have him. They've got to do it. The last 2 years, the Predators have made two trades at the trading deadline. Last year, they acquired Ryan Hartman for a first-round pick from the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, Ryan Hartman's had a nice season this season, not going to take anything away from him, but did Ryan Hartman put you over the top last year in the playoffs by any metric?
No.
If anything, he got scratched a couple of times, got suspended in the Colorado series. I mean, Hartman was a disaster last year in the playoffs. So you traded a first-round pick because everybody that calls in and everybody, they got to trade, Jared. They have to trade. And they got Ryan Hartman, a fourth-line player. The year before that, I forgot about this trade until David Poile brought it up today on Darren and Donick. They traded, I think, a fourth or a sixth or something like that for P.A. Parenteau. Remember old P.A.?
Sure.
The Preds had every injury known to man in the Western Conference Final and Stanley Cup Final, and guess who didn't get to play? P.A. Parenteau. He did not go in the game. They did not need him. It did not. So they've made trades. But the trades are not really putting you over the top one way or another. And so they go into this year, and everybody's on the same. They need a trade. Jared, they have got to have a trade. They need a trade. What are they going to do to put them over the top against the Winnipeg Jets? And I don't think they need to make a trade. I think the team is good enough right now to win the Stanley Cup. They do not need a trade. The trades they've made lately, do you really need Ryan Hartman? Not really. Now, he's had a nice year, you know, whatever. But Kyle Turris, everything you gave up for Kyle Turris, what's Kyle Turris done for this franchise?
The hard part for me about the trades is by the time the trade is taken care, you're done. You know, if you get to the trade deadline, how much time's left in the season? There's like, what, 15 games, 20 games or something left? And I'm not sure. Now, I'm not a hockey guy, but I'm not sure that that's enough time, you know, for a guy to get acclimated, to get,
you know. It was for Paul Stastny.
To get, well, I mean, I'm sure there are exceptions everywhere, but I'm talking about as a general rule. As a general rule, for a guy, you know, here we're talking about guys playing 3 or 4 years in the system to get ready to move up to the NHL to play, and then, you know, you make a trade, and it's right at the end of the year, and the next thing you know, you're in the playoffs, and I'm not sure how comfortable a bunch of those guys are. I don't know. I'm just not sure.
Well, what I really hate is the trade deadline is a month and a half away, and so you're going to have the Preds fans that go crazy for about a month. Jared, what are they going to do? Jared, they got to add. Jared, what do you think? I mean, they got to do something. They don't need to do anything. And I don't totally agree with what you just said right there about you needing time to acclimate on a hockey team. I mean, I think we've seen a lot of guys, you know, who have been kind of the, I call them the hired guns.
Well, you know, I mean, maybe you don't need any time. I'm just saying, I know I watch our people and we say, okay, what are you doing? Well, we're going to move him around and we're going to see him here and see who he feels good about playing with and all of those kinds of things before you kind of settle on where he's going to be. And in my mind, that is all part of the learning process of being in a new place. I mean, again, I didn't ever play hockey, but I mean, I'm going to guess it's, it's not as simple as just, hey, put your, you know, sharpen your skates, let's go.
That wasn't what you were about to say, was it?
What?
Sharpen your skates? I thought you were going to say put your blank on and let's go.
Oh, no.
That's where I thought you were going. But, anywho, I would say, I mean, I don't totally agree with that. I mean, if you get the right hired gun, you know, he can come right in. Paul Stastny last year, Evander Kane last year for San Jose. But then again, at the same time, I mean, we've seen teams that are just wrecked by trade deadline deals they didn't need to make that didn't even help them. I mean, think about the deal that Washington made 2 years ago for Shattenkirk from St. Louis. They don't win with Shattenkirk. Shattenkirk leaves as a free agent, and then they go on and win the Stanley Cup without Shattenkirk. So how big of a deal was that? So I think there's a lot of that. And ultimately, your team is your team. And I think that if you're going to win in the Stanley Cup final, it's going to be because of Ryan Johansson and Philip Forsberg and Victor Arvidsson and P.K. Subban and Pekka Rinne, and that's why you're going to win it. You're not going to win it because you got Wayne Simmonds. No offense to Wayne Simmonds. Joe Rexroad in the Tennessean writes, says, I do think we'll see Thursday, as we saw Tuesday, as we've actually seen all season, evidence to support this belief. The Predators do not need to swing a major deal by the February 25th trading deadline to win the cup they covet. They need to play their best when it matters most, as they did in the spring of 2017 and didn't in the spring of 2018. The roster has all the ingredients, or at least I think it does. How could we know for sure? The Predators haven't had full use of it yet this season. So, again, I don't consider Kyle Turris to matter that much. Everybody else seems to. I don't. I think Kyle Turris is overrated. I like Colton Sissons on that second line more than I ever liked Turris there. But Joe goes on to talk about Kyle Turris. When he returns, the Predators will have their full team. My thought to that is you're never going to have your full team in the Stanley Cup final. Like, you're never going to – if you get all the way to June, somebody is going to go down. The question is who. It's like the NFL. As Vrabel would say, the injury the injury rate in the game is 100%?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so someone will get hurt along the way if you try to make it to the Cup final. The question is, do you need to trade an asset in order to get somebody that will put you over the top? And I think the answer is no, because I don't think any of the guys out there are good enough to put the team over the top more so than the other guys that are already on the team.
Well, that's always the question, though. You know, is there somebody out there that can get you over the top? And I think if you're David Poile, you're looking at it and you're saying, yeah, you know, is there somebody out there that's going to win you the seventh game? Is there somebody out there that's going to, you know, help you get past the second, third, you know, series to where you are now healthy and ready to go with all of those things? And if you can find that guy out there, then I say, great, go get him. But if he's not out there, and I'm kind of like you, I kind of doubt that he is, then, you know, let's go ahead and stand pat and get better.
Besides, I mean, they always talk about thinking for the future, and they, you know, last year they argued that a first round pick was worth it for Hartman, which, again, even to this day, I think a first round pick was a gross overpayment for Ryan Hartman. But they thought that a first round pick was worth it because they'd have him for the future. Well, you keep losing first round picks every year, trading them and trading prospects for guys like Kyle Turris and second round picks, you're not going to have guys in the lower levels 3 or 4 years from now, you know, Milwaukee or, you know, in the system somewhere to be able to come up and help you in the future. I mean, I think what we're seeing right now with a guy like Colton Sissons is these things take time for some of these guys. And once they come in, they are vital key pieces. And so to me, I don't see the need to waste the assets to bring in Wayne Simmonds. And I know you say, well, but what about what he would do for the power play? What would he... I've told you my theory on the power play, and I seem to think you agree with my theory on the power play. And that is that, hey, the power play under Laviolette's going to be great for 10 games, then it's going to stink for 10 games. Then it's going to be great for 10 games, it's going to stink for 10 games. It's going to be, and it doesn't matter who's on the team. Doesn't matter that. Doesn't matter the, you know, the net front presence, the this, the that. It doesn't matter. The thing that still kills me to this day, and maybe I should let it go, but what kills me to this day is how they didn't use Scott Hartnell until it was too late in the playoffs last year. I mean, everybody wants physical, tough, get in front of the net, push him around, do the... You go sit on the bench, Scott Hartnell. Like, what? But now you want to trade a first-round pick for Wayne Simmons? That's where I struggle with this. So to me, I think the team's good as is. I don't think they need a trade, and everyone's going to tell me I'm wrong. And you're, because you want new players. You always want new shiny players, draft picks. You always want it. So the fans are not going to agree. But the truth is, and Joe Rexroad's right, and he's not right very often, but he is right. They do not need to make a trade. With that, we'll take your phones. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. And tonight's game, I think, is going to tell you everything you need to know. Well, I shouldn't say everything you need to know about a series with Winnipeg. What happens tonight, I think, will foreshadow what happens in the playoffs. And I will explain that next. And your phones. 615-737-1025 is Jaden the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Is there any difference in the meaning of a game against Winnipeg because of what happened last year and how the playoffs are set up to where there's a good chance you're probably going to play them again?
I mean, not tonight, no. I mean, obviously, looking back at last year, we obviously wanted a different outcome, but at the same time, we can't really do anything about that now. And it's all about setting us up for this year. And obviously, the division is probably going to come down to either them or us, or this game is big for that.
That was Philip Forsberg earlier today as the Preds get set to take on the Jets. And so this is my one theory about tonight's game that's going to foreshadow the series. And this is why I don't think they need to make a trade at the trade deadline. You know who's going to win the game tonight? It's going to be a big name. Like, it's going to be Blake Wheeler or Patrick Laine or Philip Forsberg or Ryan Johansson or Roman Josi or Pecorine pitches a shutout. Or that's who's going to win the game tonight. And that's who's going to win a series when they play. It's not going to be because of your fourth line Ryan Hartman that you acquired at the trade deadline last year, or the next Ryan Hartman that you acquired at the trade deadline this year. You're not going to win the series because of that guy. Now, I say that, and Paul Stastny did have a huge effect on the series last year for the Jets. But Stastny is a big name. I mean, I think they probably got the best guy, him and Evander Kane, that were available at the deadline last year. But it's going to be won by those guys or lost by those guys. And to me, I think tonight's game will be won by those guys or lost by those guys. And I think the series, when they play, will be won or lost by those kind of guys.
Which makes sense. You know, like I said before, you get into the big games and the big players have the biggest outcome on the big games. And the truth is, when you put a team together, that's what you're hoping for. You're hoping that it comes down to, okay, who's got the best, you know, top six, or who's got the best whatever it may be, simply because you feel like yours are better than theirs.
Well, when you lost the Stanley Cup, you lost it because of Crosby and Malkin. I mean, that's why you lost. Crosby, Malkin, and then, you know, Pekka, you know, had his struggles up there. Let's go to your phones as promised. 615-737-1025. Ryan is up next on the Preds at the trade deadline. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Ryan.
All right, gentlemen. I hate saying this, but you may be right on this. The Preds don't need to go make that big splash on the trade deadline. Only way I see the Preds making a big splash is if they are not confirmed on Dante Fabro.
Yep.
If they're going to make a trade, they need to do like they did when we went to the Stanley Cup. Get third or fourth line guys. Get some depth guys. Only player I'd like to see them acquire at the trade deadline would probably be Brian Boyle from New Jersey. He's 6'6", big guy, can be a good enforcer if we have to play Winnipeg in the second round. Other than that, I don't really see anyone out there that'd be worth it. His contract's only 2.5 as a free agent at the end of the year. That'd be the only player I would like to see them probably try to acquire this the trade deadline.
So thank you for your call. And again, I think a minor part at the deadline, sure, you know, but again, that's not going to put you over the top against Winnipeg.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and this is the question, I'm looking at it from the other side. What is it that the Preds can give up to make a big-time trade? I mean, you know, you look at Milwaukee and you say, okay, who's down there that you would be willing to give up? And I don't know who that is. Then you look at your roster now and say, you know, who is it that you would be willing to give up? And you know what? I don't see that either, because I don't see, you know, whoever you're going to be willing to give up is not going to be enough to get a big name guy, whoever that big name guy is.
Well, I mean, if you're willing to give up Tolvanen, or Fabbro, you know, maybe you are. I mean, I think Tolvanen or Fabbro would get you a big-time guy. I will say this, though. I heard David Poile talking about the trade deadline or defenseman. I think he was talking about the depth on Darren and Donick today, and they asked him, you know, about something, and he was kind of going over the depth of the defenseman, and he was like, you know, Dante Fabbro, we expect to maybe come over here when his season is over at Boston College. We're hopeful that maybe he makes that choice. I go, oh, here we go again. I mean, it's the constant recruitment of these players. It's like every time the guy goes to college, it's like, you know, are the Preds going to sign him? I don't know. Like, we went through that last year. We went through that with Jimmy Vesey. Like, it's I'm kind of getting tired of that. Like, if Fabbro doesn't want to come here, then they got to start evaluating how they're signing guys or drafting guys, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, and we need, you know, one of these guys to show up and not only like us, but do something. I mean, we're getting nothing out of these guys.
Preds fans don't like this, but Jimmy Vesey would help the Predators a lot. Let's go to Kyle, who's up next right here on Jared and the GM. Thank you for calling. What's up, Kyle?
Hey, man, just driving to get my daughter. So my thing is, the Dante Fabbro thing, there's really not a spot for him right now because our top four defensemen are the Stag, and we signed Hamuse for 2 years. So, you know, if he's in college, let him get better. But my other point I actually called about was I don't think the Predators should make a move at the trade deadline at all unless it's for an AHL guy, part of a three-way trade. But my actual question is, what do you guys think of Dan Hamuse? Do you think he's been a great asset, or do you think it's been kind of a waste of a signing?
I think he kind of sucks. What do you think?
I mean, I think he stepped up when PK was down, but other than that, I mean, he filled the void, but he hasn't really. I mean, I'm not seeing the scoring. I'm not seeing the setup for scoring either from him. So,
well, he's a third pair defenseman, so I don't know how much scoring you expect out of the third pair defenseman, and I appreciate your call, Kyle.
I think that's a key with guys like him. I mean, you're not bringing him to be the first defenseman or first line defenseman.
His job is not to create goals; it's to just make sure they don't happen when you're out there.
Yeah, I mean, yours get out there and play defense, and that's the end of it.
Boy, he had a rough stretch there around Christmas. Oh man, was he bad! But I will say this in his defense: he is a third pair defenseman who was brought in to be a third pair defenseman. And for 2 months had to play on the second pair because of the injury to PK Subban. Mm-hmm. And everybody tells me he did a nice job. Now, when I watch the games, which is every game, I always see him a little slow or kind of screwing up or something like that. But, you know, he's not supposed to be PK Subban. He's not paid like PK Subban. And it goes back to your point. You decide, you know what, my number four receiver is my number two receiver. Well, he ain't a number two receiver.
Well, and you bring in a third quarterback to be a third quarterback, and then people say, well, you know what? He didn't start a single game. Really? I mean, I don't want him to start a single game. He's here to be the third quarterback.
Like, remember when Malcolm Butler was struggling and they asked Vrabel, like, so have you ever thought about benching Butler and throwing LaShawn Sims out there? And Vrabel's like, no. And they're like, why not? Like, because Malcolm's better? You know, like, that's kind of the thing there. Although, I will say this. I'm not a humongous believer in Dan Hamuse. But as a third-pair defenseman, fine. You know, he's better than the other guys. John is up next here on Jared and the GM and has been waiting patiently. What's up, John?
Hey, Jared. You know, one thing I'll tell you. The folks I talk to, I think a lot more are in your position or take your position that the Preds don't need anything right now. If there was a huge glaring weakness, then, yeah, go after a Wayne Simmons, though you're paying a lot of rent for a player. There's no guarantee there. So I think as we sit right now, we're good, and I think everything's starting to gel. Excuse me. I just think we're playing better of late, and I think this is a good time to say, hey, this is our team. We're set in stone. Let's go. Let's get after it, and we're gonna ride the horses that brought us to the game. So I agree with you 100% on this. We don't need anybody. Let's just go and get to the Stanley Cup.
Thank you for your call, guys. Doesn't it feel like if the Predators play their best, they're probably gonna win the Cup? And that last year, the reason that they didn't win in the second round was really because they didn't play their best. You know, they had some good games, but they didn't play their best.
Right. Usually when you lose, you don't play your best.
I know, but, like, they didn't. They won against Punch and Judy Colorado, and they didn't play their best in that series either. I remember it was 2-0 after the first two games, and I remember on the show I had the take the day after they won the second game being like, they're not playing well enough, and I figured I was going to get blasted by the callers and Twitter and everything, and everybody called in and was like, you're right, they're not playing well enough, and I'm like, whoa. And remember that game that they won where Ryan Hartman almost screwed up the whole thing in the Colorado series, and you went on that rant about how if they were playing Winnipeg, they'd get their butts beat? I mean, I think we know the difference between the Preds when they're playing well and when they're not playing well. Let's go to Joe, who's up next here on Jared and the GM. Thank you for calling. What's up, Joe?
Hey, you're there?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go, Joe.
Okay, I want to go ahead and take a shout-out to Floyd right quick. Every time I hear that R&S Wood Flooring commercial, I think of Carlson. I think of him doing the Carlson dance. RMS with glory. I'm just saying.
It's everywhere.
I want to see Floyd do a little dance somewhere along the line.
Joe, please, on the Predators.
Okay, on the Predators. I'm thinking exactly, I think what the last caller was saying, that not to break up the situation, you're talking about continuity on the Titans and everything like that. I agree with the last caller, or whatever caller it was, of keeping everything together. I believe in this team. And, you know, I'm for Buffalo and everything like that, and I've seen our team do shit, or only poop.
Well, thank you for your call, Joe. I mean, here's the thing.
Joe.
Bringing one guy in at the trade deadline is not going to just change your entire team, unless it is a real malcontent, and I just don't see David Poile ever bringing a real malcontent. So I guess I'm just not worried about that. By the way, that may be the worst call I can remember in a while. Like, that call from start to finish was just terrible. Just terrible. Please, please call better in the future. That's all I ask. Would you co-sign on that with me or no?
Well, I mean, we certainly can't put up with language like that.
Hey. I mean, so. And the beginning part was just kind of like, you know, get to it. Crispy is going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on all of this. Plus, I had a very interesting conversation with Crispy earlier today. I want to get his thoughts on that, too. As the Predators get set to take on the Jets, it is a rematch. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5, the game. Jared and the GM are live at Bridgestone Arena. It is a big game, and it's a Thursday. And if it's a big game on a Thursday, you know Crispy is going to be here with us, Terry Crisp. Terrence, how are you?
Bring in the big dogs, GM. Bring in the big dogs.
Amen.
Where's Hal Gill when I need him? Speaking of big dogs.
Hal Gill does Tuesdays. And Hal Gill, you know, he's got a little bit of an attitude. And, you know, not the good kind of attitude. It's the bad kind of attitude.
Did I just hear him say Hal Gill has an attitude?
He doesn't even realize it when it comes out sometimes.
Hey, if I was playing hockey right now, I think Hal and I might have to drop the gloves at some point. But Crispy.
We'll give you a nice funeral, son, don't you?
Tonight, the Predators take on Winnipeg. It's a playoff rematch. Now, we're going to see this matchup a couple times from here on out. What do you take away from a game like today? Because, I mean, the way the playoffs are set up, it's almost inevitable these two teams will match up in the second round of the playoffs. So what do you take away from a game tonight where the fans are fired up? I mean, I was in the room this morning. You were in the room this morning. You can tell the players are focused. They're not thinking about the Washington game. What do you take away from tonight's game?
I love it. This is exactly, we call them, you know what they call them, yardsticks. This is a yardstick for us. Tampa Bay was a yardstick. They play a different style, so let's see if we can stay that style and stay with them. We did a good job. The style that Winnipeg plays, let's see if we can stick with them. Last game, we beat them 3-0. We got them out of their comfort zone. We had them running around. They took penalties. They got themselves into trouble. We were the ones who capitalized on it. So what it tells me is you're going to meet different teams at different times for yardsticks. This is the one I'm interested in. Why am I interested in it? Because I have a long memory. My memory goes back to a seventh game last year that still sticks in my craw.
Well, I think it sticks in everybody's craw. To that point, the Winnipeg Jets. Last year, if they had a, you know, a handful of showdown games with the Jets at the end of the season, and both teams were really neck and neck for that, not only for the division but for the President's Trophy, and the Predators won all those games. And it didn't really translate much when we got into April. And that's what I'm looking at here. And I asked Philip Forsberg about that today, like how much did those games last year translate into the playoffs? And he was like, not really. You know, like, and so I look at this and I go back to what Floyd said the other day, which was, you know, as a personnel guy, you kind of watch and say, okay, can a guy like Grimaldi play the physical kind of game for seven games that you'll have to play against Winnipeg? Can your stars, Arvidsson, who is at another level right now, can he do that for seven games against the Jets? That's kind of what I'm looking at tonight. When you watch it as a coach, what do you see?
Yeah, they can. If you're in the first round against them, or in the second round maybe, you get to the third and the fourth round, you play a team like Winnipeg, and your little thoroughbreds, the little speedsters, they're running out of gas. They're getting hammered and hammered and hammered. And that's what Winnipeg did, and the Vegas Knights did so very, very well. Their big Clydesdales in the third round, fourth round, they were still all banging, kicking, crashing, going on. And that's the proof in the pudding. Can they last those rounds?
Crispy, as a coach, you play this game and things don't go well. We were talking about this earlier. I'm not sure that that tomorrow morning when you're standing in front of the team talking to the team, I'm not sure your speech is a great deal of difference whether you win or lose.
No. You know what? If you listen to the smart coaches now, which we all do in their scrums, you don't get a lot of them in scrums. They're not giving you a whole lot. But after a game, you'll hear how they handle it. And most coaches, and I like Lav too, his meetings stay within the confines of the meeting. But for myself as a coach, I played for one of the best in the business, Scotty Bowman. And another one, Fred Shiro. If you lost a game 7-1 the next day, they come in and praised you. They didn't run you down. You were low enough as it is. You could crawl underneath a snake's belly. You're so low. Mm. That's when they come in, they're positive. It's when you're winning a streak is when a coach goes in and chews you out and corrects a little bit of things. Because you're in a mood to take it then. You're winning. You say, what do you want? We're winning. Yeah. But when you're losing, you don't need piled on. You don't pile on them. You make sure they're aware of the fact that they didn't like the game, didn't like the way we played, and here's where I think we can get a whole lot smarter and better.
Do you, when you get into a game like this, of this caliber, is it more pressure? I've always thought big games are won by big-time players.
Yes, you totally know, agree.
Whoever they are. And so when you get into a game like this, do you put more pressure and more vision on those guys that would be your – quote-unquote stars?
Yep, sure,
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
And if it's a big game, coming third period, you're going to see your top two lines get a lot more ice time than the third and fourth line. They're just going to go down. There's no doubt. When we used to play, when they had four lines, sometimes in the second half of the game, the fourth line some didn't see ice. Like, I already saw the ice. You were just there to give the boys a little breather. Back out they come again because the coaches said, okay, I'm running my best. You're looking in the overtime now. You got maybe five players in each team, the good ones, maybe six. That's all the guys you're going to see on the ice. Bing, 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 because they can regroup, do it the way it's all stretched out now. Yeah, you run with your guns. I heard you guys walking in, big games, big-time players. You were saying tonight, if you come down to an overtime or whatever, he was saying that, you look towards a Forsberg or a Laine or a Shifley or Arvey or Joey, whoever. You look towards those guys to lead you. And in the situation in the NHL right now, and I don't care, and I'm going to say it again until I leave this game, in the playoffs, in the team that wins the Stanley Cup, almost every year the team that wins it, for that particular playoff run and season, they had the best goalie or the second best goalie in the league that year. Mark my words.
And I don't think there's any doubt about that. Terry Crisp is with us, and we were talking to C. Mace yesterday about that very thing. And he said the big difference between the two teams from this year to last year, or from last year to this year, is that Pekka's still Pekka and he's still rolling and all that. But maybe Hellebuck is not having the season that he had last year. And I thought this was a possibility only because, remember, you know, Winnipeg going into last year, they weren't very happy with Connor Hellebuck. And he was going into a free agent year and they kind of called him out a little bit. And they signed Steve Mason to that $9 million contract. And so, you know, they kind of weren't all in on Hellebuck. And then Hellebuck goes out there and loses weight and has a great season, and then he gets his big contract. And so I do, you know, we've seen that in sports now. Some guys, they're all about the money, which I don't begrudge anybody for being. But I do wonder how much that hurts Winnipeg's chances to win the Cup if Hellebuck is not at the same level he was last year.
And you know what? The kid behind him, the Brochaw kid, he is playing like he's 10-1-1, this kid. Never heard of him. And now suddenly he's the one pushing. And look at our situation right now, Saros. When he comes in, we win hockey games. And we fully expect to win them when he comes in. These two teams tonight are almost on a level. Rene and Hellebuck, head-to-head. Saros and Brochaw, head-to-head. Both these teams are solid in goal when it comes to that area there.
Who's, if you look at these two teams just strictly from a personnel standpoint, where are the differences?
Probably the biggest difference to me is in size. Winnipeg has a lot of big guys that can keep pounding you and pounding you. They got some skill, but I think in the speed department we can outmatch them. We're better. In skill, we're just, I think we can almost match. Yes, we can in that area. It's if in a long haul, I like, and I said it last year, I like the way Winnipeg built their team. They've got a little bit of everything going into it, coming at you with it all. And I think for our sakes, against Winnipeg, discipline. We got to just stay out of the penalty box, egg them into it, and take advantage of the power play then and get our power play clicking to take advantage of it.
Two very important questions for you. The first one, Crispy, for the love of goodness.
This is good.
Fix the power play. How?
I've heard you day after day after day. You know what? If I get to my briefcase, I'm going to go and get it out because I got a magic wand in it. and I'm going to just get it. GM, where's your magic wand, GM? You had one, didn't you? Everybody
had them all.
Don't you have it? You know what I'd do? I'd go back and look in the archives when our power play was clicking. And nothing has changed since then. We have almost identical skill level and players when it was clicking on all four cylinders. What was our power play? What did we do game in and game out? And I can tell you right now, I could go up to the blackboard and diagram it. You still use blackboards? No, eh?
Whiteboards, but yeah, whiteboard, same thing.
Okay, anyways, that's my thing is go back to what was successful. And it was there, and we still have the same guys in our uniform when it was successful. So why is it not successful? Ask them. Ask the players.
Well, the players coaches say go they're crazy. Trying to pass it too
coaches
much.
Go nuts and coaches get fired trying to figure this crap out.
Yeah.
Ask the players. Call them in and say, okay, you five geniuses and the next five coming out, what's the difference? Perimeter play, not shooting, getting shots blocked, missing point blank shots on net. What is our biggest problem, guys? You tell me. You're out there. I'm standing behind a bench scratching my head. I hope it's my
trying to
scratching.
Figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm looking for that wand.
Well, this is what we were talking about yesterday that I just don't get is I feel like in the 4 years that we've been on the air and Peter's been the coach here, it feels like, you know, there'll be a 10-game stretch where their power play, every time that the other team goes to the box, it's in the back of the net, just like that. And then there's a 12-game period where they're terrible, and then there's a 9-game period where they're great. And it's incredibly streaky. Same players doing the same stuff, same coaches coaching the same thing. It didn't feel any different to me. It's just the results. I don't know what I chalk that up to.
You know what? Again, there's no magic wand. The guys have got to answer the bell on their own. They got to sit down. Like, I can remember when I played and the guys came back to the bench. They weren't the best of buddies, meaning us three here. If we were out there and something went wrong, I want to know why it went wrong with us three because I want to go back out there. I don't want to be sitting on my rear end here and the coach mad at us. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say, GM, when I give you the puck and you're in the open and you're in a better shot than I have, you take it. Don't go looking for somebody else. Don't go looking for it. You take it. So you get in the corner. You go first. I'll be in the slot. You talk and you talk it out. It's not always roses when you come back to that bench. Sometimes you got to look a guy in the eye and say, hey, what are you doing? What are you thinking on that one when you go in the corner and you know exactly where I'm going to be and you throw it blind around the boards? What are you thinking?
Terry Crisp is with us. Yesterday, the callers kind of turned it into Fiala hate hour there for a minute. And I just don't understand the angst against Fiala. I think he's a good player. I don't think he's a great player. You won't win the cup because of Fiala, but I think we've seen at times that Fiala's he's a good young player. And I look at the jump that Sissons has made this year and Arvidsson has made this year and Ekholm has made really 2 years ago, and I'm like, that could be in Fiala's future. And people have called in. They want Fiala traded. When you see him, how foolish do you think that is, or do you understand where the fans are?
I think it's foolish. He's young. He's still young. He hasn't got the ice time the other guys have got. He hasn't had the line mates that Arby's had and Forsberg's had and go on down the line. But I think for his game, for what his style is, yeah, I think it is. I think the one thing that Fiala still has to learn is that once you come into this league, your moves are good when you first start to use them. But after a while, the rest of the teams know what you're going to do. Change it up. Yeah, get absolutely. Some new moves or move something differently. Make some few changes on your attack that you can do. And he's got the skill level to do that.
Crispy, last thing for you. We have you figured out.
No, you don't.
Yeah, oh, we do. We do. I've noticed this on the postgame shows on Fox Sports Tennessee. Whenever you got something on your mind that you want to talk about, it doesn't matter what the question that is asked to you is. Somehow, some way, it comes out. And yesterday, or I should say Tuesday, was no different. Every question was asked. Crispy, what'd you think of Saros? Crispy, what'd you think of this? Crispy, what'd you think of that? And every time you talked about whatever you were asked and then went right back to the defense. And then back to the defense. And at the beginning of the postgame show, after Peter's interview in the postgame show, at the end of the postgame show, you went back to the defense almost every time. Why, in a game that they scored 7 goals and the offense was clicking, did you make such a big deal about defense?
Did you see where all the plays started? No. You
in weren't even
looking
end.
Where you know. You and your backfield.
Grimaldi made
started.
A great play defensively.
We had
before
three
Grimaldi's
good pickpockets coming back late. Ham Hughes come a full mile back to pick up a guy. The guys were coming back and back checking with a purpose. Not looking at stars. They had their heads on swivels. They were picking up the late man. They were coming hard into the corners. We made, how about Bonino? 4 seconds to go in the one period. Saros was caught out of the net. Wilson's going to put it in the wide open net. Bonino picks his thing, picks his pocket. Why? Because he was playing defensive hockey with 4 seconds to go.
It was
Judge
great.
Judge Judy, arrest my case.
We were laughing about it because, of course, we spent the whole time talking about the offense and the hat trick. And then they have Peter on. Peter's talking about defense. You're on. You're talking about defense. I said, we may be talking about the wrong stuff here.
I said, you know, it's bad when Bonino scores 2 goals. That's like the 7th most important thing that happened. And then no one even wants to talk about Bonino's 2 goals. They want to talk about his defense.
Defense.
Exactly.
Terry Crisp with us. Crispy, we will see you on the postgame show tonight. Cannot wait for what that subliminal topic in your head is today on the postgame show. I'm very excited.
All right, guys. I just want to say, don't think that just hasn't been a little slice of heaven with you guys, because it has.
My man.
Not been.
Thanks, Crispy.
As always, Jared and the GM, the game. I can't stop thinking about it. We'll get to that next. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Andy, the Boston media and some of the national guys are saying it's going to be too cold for the crowd to be a factor. What's your message for Chiefs fans?
It's never too cold for the Chiefs fans. They'll be there. And that's a great thing about the Sea of Red. Man, they're loud and they show up all the time. So they'll be ready to go.
That was Andy Reid when asked about, you know, oh, the cold's going to make the fans not as excited or loud or whatever have you. I'll tell you what. You know what'll make them? The cold will make them not as loud if the Patriots go in there and score 2 touchdowns to start the game, and then those fans will be deathly quiet. Now, I, Floyd, am obsessed with the AFC Championship game. Like, I can't, to me, forget the Super Bowl. This is the game of all games. Brady, Belichick, the Patriots dynasty, Mahomes, Andy Reid, the wild crowd at Arrowhead. It's going to be cold. It's going to be – I have no idea who's going to win. I have no idea what the other two coaches are cooking up, especially Belichick. I have no idea if Brady's greatness is going to be the difference in this game. And I have no idea if Mahomes and the Chiefs are just too talented for New England to keep up with them. I have no idea. I am excited. I can't stop thinking about this game. Sunday night, this is – and look, it's not a rivalry game. It's not a – I just feel different about this AFC title game than I have felt about AFC title games in a long time. I am jazzed about this game.
The thing that is interesting about this game is, and this usually doesn't happen, is that it is a comparison, if you will. You've got on one hand the ultimate team in New England. I mean, the everything about it is teamwork. You can go through, and we say this on a weekly basis, and especially true when you get to this point in time in the season where you look at, you say, okay, how many stars do they have? How many stars does the other team have? And most of the time, New England falls short on all of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, they play people that are better than they are all the time. But because of what they do and how they do it, they've been able to win. The other side of that is you've got a coach that is much less proven, even though he is proven. You've got a team that is much less proven, and yet completely full of stars. I mean, just that's like the defense. You go, well, the defense may not be that good, but they do have Dee Ford, and they do have guys that can put Jones. Pressure on the quarterback. Yeah, they go through, and they you end up naming three or four guys that are great players. And I think they're obviously the same on offense. You know, you say, well, you know, I'm not sure how they compare, but, you know, you've got Kelce, and you've got Mahomes, and you've got the receiver. I mean, it is just jam-packed with talent. And it's going to be, in my mind, it's going to be the ultimate. You're going to have the stars. They're going to go out there, and they're going to try to do what they've been doing. And maybe they're able to do it. And if they're able to do it, I think they win. If they aren't, you know what New England's going to do. You know how New England's going to play. And if New England can go out and you let them continue doing what they've been doing, then I think it's going to be really hard on Kansas City.
Well, I just wonder, too, the other thing about it is how will the weather affect this? I think this is going to be, you know, can Brady keep up at Kansas City? I know if this game were in New England, I'd pick the Patriots and would not even really think twice about it. But can Brady, can he keep up with Kansas City? Because New England's defense is not that good. So Kansas City's going to score some points, unless Belichick just comes up with some kind of crazy scheme, which he's done in the past. Like, if that's the case, it's going to be a great game. But can Brady on the road with a Gronk with his walker, can he keep them in the game? And that's where I don't know the answer to that.
Well, I think the one thing we see from New England on a yearly basis is when they go into games like this, they have a way of getting themselves ready. And I think, you know, it started last week with Tom and his, you know, well, nobody gives us a chance anyway. And I think they've been breeding off of that all week long. And I think they'll go in there and they will have some stuff that, to be honest with you, Kansas City hasn't seen before.
I can't believe Mahomes came out and said this week that he was fooled by Belichick in the first game, because all that's going to make him do is Belichick's going to try to fool him again.
Yeah, and Bill is not – Bill knows what was good and what he can use again and whatnot. Just because you go in there and you get an interception off of a coverage, if you run that coverage again, it could be a touchdown for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and Bill is really, really good about knowing that. But he'll have something that they have never, ever done and never showed, or certainly haven't showed against him. I think we see that, you know, when you expect them, they won't be able to play man for man because their front isn't that good. What do? They play man for man the whole game. You don't. They can't blitz because they can't cover. What do? They blitz every snap. You know, well, they can't run the ball. Well, okay, let's see. So they rush for 250 yards. Or they can't throw the ball downfield. Okay, well, the running back will catch 15 passes. I mean, they've just got a lot of ways to beat you. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what they pull up.
Oh, I cannot wait. I am so excited. Between the Preds and the Jets tonight and that on Sunday, and I have to go to a birthday dinner on Saturday night because I was kind of pumped up about Saturday. Saturday would have been a perfect 2-TV day because you got Vandy Mississippi State basketball, although Vandy basketball.
How about Vandy basketball?
And then you got the Preds in Florida. But I'm telling you, Preds and Jets tonight, and then you get that game. I feel bad for the NFC game because, like, obviously we're all going to watch all the games. My interest level in the NFC game is like 1/10 of my interest level in the AFC game.
Well, the NFC game? is really not that far away from what this is. You know, you've got New Orleans.
The old great quarterback.
Yep, the old quarterback and, you know, the old scheme and the old coach versus, here we go, the hot shots and, you know, these young quarterbacks and young receivers and defensemen, and it'll be interesting.
Everything is on the table for Ask the GM. The Preds are on the table. The title games are on the table. The draft is on the table. The Titans are on the table. The offensive coordinator is on the table. It's all on the table. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. And the best question for Ask the GM, presented by Bob's Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows of Nashville, will receive a pair of tickets to see Vanderbilt take on Mississippi State this Saturday at Memorial Gym. So get in there and win those tickets with a great question for the GM, but everything is literally on the table. Ask the GM, presented by Bob's Steak and Chop House and Pella Windows of Nashville, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. It is Jared and the GM right here live from Bridgestone Arena on ESPN 102.5 The Game.